Last time on Wanderlust.
Well, it's nice to meet you three. You know, I really have to commend all three of you. You are all very, very brave. That could not have been easy being out here with the Blighthounds.
Oh, well, it's good that they have a fun name at least. It would have been good if they were in a brochure, maybe some signage.
I don't think anyone knew that they were there, but now we do.
Start packing up and making your way back towards the settlement. By the settlement, by the way, in case we're being too vague on this, this is the, that, like, modular futuristic society that you guys found.
I want to see what food they have.
Oh, that's an interesting question. They're made of metal, and when you pick one up, they're clearly full of some kind of liquid. And then there are much smaller vials as well. So, like, whatever flavor combinations you selected, those are, like, thimble-sized, right?
I'm going to grab one nutritional canister, and then I'm going to grab however much is, like, 3 pounds worth of those flavor things for Matthew.
I'll say you get, like, the mid-watch, right? It's 3 a.m.
I am the night.
Far, far, far off from the fire, you start to hear a rustling, like shaking leaves.
I look in that direction.
You can see a figure that is, to your eyes, it seems like it's wearing some kind of loose-fitting clothes. It's still at this point largely in dark. The shadows on it are pretty severe from the, like, differing moonlight. So as you look at it, you can see, like, rough and indistinct features of a face, but those are cast in this sort of dim, multicolored light from all the moons moving above you.
Okay. I'm gonna get out my crank flashlight and shine it in their direction.
What you at first took to be some kind of garment, some kind of cloak, is leaves that seem to be pouring off of this figure as it walks closer.
I am a part of all of this, but this is changing, and I find that oh so exciting. You are the thing that is changing. All of you rushing through here, through all of this. That's new to me.
All right, Juliet, you have just startled awake, your crank flashlight still in your lap, and you're kind of staring at that spot where you remembered seeing this leafy creature rustle towards you quickly. You have a very clear memory of the entire conversation. You don't feel like it's drowned in, like, the fog of a dream when you wake. You know, it doesn't have that effervescent quality of slipping away from you. It's still pretty fixed in your memory. And the fact that you're holding the flashlight and staring in that direction gives you pause as to whether or not this happened. The fire has burned down to just a smolder. The kids are kind of off in a corner asleep, and everyone else is maybe slowly stirring.
Juliet is going to start getting out the cookware to start stoking the fire and making breakfast. Everyone, I know it's a bit early for this, but I have something to tell you.
What's going on? What are you talking about?
There is definitely a twig, like, in Autumn's hair that she does not notice because she's very tired.
I saw a creature last night, and it talked to me. I'm calling it a forest phantom because it was leafy, like it was made from forest detritus.
Are you sure you just didn't fall asleep and dream it?
I am fairly certain, yes. I thought that too, initially, but I still remember it very, very clearly. And in it, it was very interested in my flashlight. And I woke with that in my hand, facing that direction. I don't really have a reason to believe it wasn't real, given all of the fantastical things that we've seen so far.
So it wasn't like a creature? It was like a...
I would say it was sentient. It spoke to me. I'm not really sure how it knew how to communicate with me.
What did it look like?
I guess imagine a vaguely humanoid figure, but made of leaves, sort of woody, green and brown.
You got that notepad of yours, right, for taking notes? Do you, like, make drawings of the stuff you find?
Oh, yes, that's a great idea. She quickly tries to sketch something. Do you want me to roll for that?
Yeah, go ahead.
I have an ability.
Look at Fred coming in with the good ideas.
Thanks, Fred. I have a skill in scientific sketches.
Okay.
Or drawing scientific sketches. It's a zero.
I'm not going to say you sketch a stick figure. I will send the sketch to the announcements chat. You draw really fast with great shading, I gotta say.
Okay, so yeah, it's got like a... It looks kind of like a... What she draws looks kind of like a scarecrow with like an external frame made of twigs and then like stuffed with leaves.
So not people like in the picture Cody said.
Are those people?
Those are people.
Oh, I found a really morbid picture.
Wait, what? I'm describing the one that you sent, Cody.
No, those are people.
Yeah.
Those are tiny people. Yeah.
Yeah, those are not twigs. Those are arms.
Yeah, if you click on it and it opens.
That is the picture I was looking at last week, too.
Oh.
I think he meant for them to be twigs, but...
So Cody, you would say it other than the people.
It doesn't have people in it. No, but leaves instead of people.
Would you say that it did have like a face and
yeah, exactly like this, because this is the picture I was describing last week.
I'm gonna ask you because I don't know if Julia would know this. Don't know if Caitlin would know this. Was the mouth moving? Was it like facially making expressions?
Oh, the mouth didn't move.
I believe it did, but not like organically.
The mouth specifically didn't move, right?
It seemed like it was made of something harder than skin.
Oh, okay.
But when it touched you with its fingers, they felt fleshy.
Okay.
That's a better word for fleshy.
That's right. It was like oddly warm.
Yeah.
It's warm and soft.
Mammalian? Also gross. This all sounds gross. This is like describing a woman as a female. It just sounds gross, you know?
Yeah.
I think this is a little bit out of my wheelhouse, but I would be so interested if we ran into them again.
I just can't believe that you saw a ghost of the forest and didn't wake me up.
I feel like I tried to, but it disappeared.
Oh, no, you tried to, and it specifically put Autumn to sleep.
Oh, that's right, yeah. I was going to, but it seemed to want to have a conversation alone.
I'm still kind of disappointed, if we're being honest.
Well, you can take the 3 a.m. watch next time, and maybe they'll find you.
Don't you worry, I'm going to. Like, was this
Julia
a question?
Julia gets out of watch forever.
She's not going to get a watch, she's just not having the 3 a.m. one. Like, was this a question? Did you think I was not going to take the 3 a.m. watch immediately?
Anyway, I don't think it meant any harm. Like I said, it was very interested in my flashlight and our technology, and it made a comment about things changing around here, potentially due to us, but it didn't seem put out by that. It seemed more curious about us being around.
Estelle wants to go over to kind of where you point out that where it showed up. Cody, can I do just like an investigation type roll to just see if there's anything there?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a no. That's a negative one.
Good effort.
I don't have good investigation skills, and she doesn't know what she's looking for.
No, I like that. You start looking around in this area that Juliet indicated, the forest here seems typical, I guess, in so far as, you know, whatever, you've seen places like this before. And as you're kind of rustling through the bushes, you feel pretty confident that you recognize what this, like, vegetation is. You know, it's plants that you've been around a lot. you know, realistically, when you start walking through a given area of forest, like, granted, there's a lot of species, but not that many. So this would be like, okay, yeah, I've seen these plants before, whatever. They should be indigenous to this area. And as you're running your hands through leaves and all of that, you feel a sharp pain in your finger. And you look down and you just have like a small cut that starts to bleed and a faint tingling in that fingertip.
Ah. Nothing over here that I can see, that stands out. And Estelle's gonna go over to her bag and pull out the first aid kit and just start, throw some antiseptic on it and start bandaging it.
Yeah, it's just like a little, just looks like a thorn, you know, like you get from like a raspberry bush or something like that.
Yeah.
Just caught in your finger. So you clean it up, bandage it up, and, think nothing of it.
Wait, raspberry bushes have thorns?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did not know that.
Yeah.
Can I make a roll to see if I, like, know anything about this thing from my books?
Yes. I will also allow this.
I got a 2.
Okay, let me give you this option. You can ask me 2 questions.
Ugh. I wanted you to give me, like, 2 truths and a lie about this thing.
Let's say 1 question, actually. I think, like, I gotta remember what a 2 means here. A 2 is just, like, okay. not stellar. You can ask me 1 question.
I think the most obvious thing is, like, what is this thing called?
Oh, I mean,
I gave it a perfectly good name. What do you mean, what is it called?
Like, but I mean,
and
like,
also, you could not possibly know that based on a book. You know what I mean? Like,
well, no, I meant, like, what do my books call it is more, you know, like,
is there like a similar creature that the books have referenced that Autumn suspects is the same as this one?
Yeah, I think that works as a question if you want to go with that.
That's what I'm trying to get for. You know, it's like, if you know, like, it's like, well, it sucks blood and it comes out at night and can turn into a bat. It's like, oh, it's a vampire. Like,
yeah,
my books would call it a vampire, even if it's not technically a vampire. It's like vampiric, you know.
I see what you mean. Okay, so appearance wise, let's say I'm gonna say this. You get 2 answers, right? So appearance-wise, you have definitely read stories where there are, you know, magical creatures that live out in a forest and they, you know, some of them, yeah, suck blood, or some of them turn you into a tree, or some of them maybe sacrifice humans or something like this, right? There's all these stories about some kind of creature of the forest, you know, and pretty frequently, having leaves instead of fur is not that weird, given it's like, you know, you glue 2 things together, you get that, right? This isn't a huge leap. But the attitude described by Juliet maybe reminds you more of like a, like an aged professor at a university that, like, you know, if you look at Indiana Jones, right? It's like this thing acts like Indiana Jones's dad. And looks like it would eat your fingertips for fun because it's a creepy forest monster. Does that make sense?
Yes. So, I'm not going to say I know what this is, Juliet, but in Rosa Riviera and the Search for the Old City, there is an old professor who gets turned into a sentient tree monster, but he doesn't become evil or mean. He just likes talking to people and still giving lectures, but he can't do that anymore because he is a tree monster and everyone's afraid of him. So what he does is whenever explorers find him, like, he like scares him into a cave where he set up his own blackboard and starts giving lectures again about all the different flora and fauna he's seen in the area. Why are you looking at
this? Not
me?
One of the best-selling ones?
Oh, it's great. It does get weird in the middle. There's a few chapters where it's just like the author kind of goes off like on this like tangent about like how like a certain filter is like actually hurting eco herbs, and like it was a big deal apparently like 50 years ago before we like switched over to like a more efficient like filtration system, and this professor kind of talks about it. But okay. I mean, the rest of the book's really good, and like the whole like turn into a monster thing's really cool.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say the attitude was similar. It was curious.
I'm pretty sure it's a professor. Like, if you see them again, we need to find an artifact to break the curse so that they can go back to their normal life.
What kind of artifact?
I mean, it's different for every monster.
Oh. Oh, I thought you were saying that this specific professor needed an artifact.
I mean, this one does need a specific artifact. I don't know what that artifact is yet. You got, Juliet, you're the person who met this Phantom, you need to ask more questions about how we can, like, save them and turn them back to normal.
Oh, you know, maybe it has something to do with the flashlight.
That is a great idea. Maybe it's, like, a glowing magic torch thing we need to find.
Like, just a fire torch? I guess it didn't seem interested in the campfire. If I see it again, I'll ask the questions, maybe. I also don't want to offend it.
Quick question.
Yes.
Do you think fire's magic?
No.
I just said, like, a glowing magic artifact, and you said fire? Grab out my sketchback. Here's a draw about triangle. So this is how a fire is made. You need fuel. What's the last thing I don't remember? Oh, oxygen.
I was going to say, if Zach doesn't know, neither does Julie, neither does Autumn.
You need fire, heat, and oxygen. And if you take away one of these legs, it's like a stool, and the whole thing will fall over and collapse.
I like that you're explaining this to the scientist.
She said fire was magic. I think this is on her.
No, I think she was just comparing the light sources.
Yes.
Okay.
That.
I was a little worried there.
Autumn, I have a degree in biochemistry.
That doesn't deal with fire, though, does it?
It deals with chemistry, you know, the study of the physical world.
You're the one who said fire is magic. I'm just making sure that you don't think fire is magic.
Anyway, that's my news for this morning. Hope everyone's awake now.
All right, Autumn goes and prepares breakfast. Twig still lodged in hair.
While we're eating, though, I thought we could maybe talk about how we're going to present everything to Sheriff Mitchell when we get back. How do we want to approach that?
So real quick, Estelle, I assume at some point the kids get up.
Oh, yeah.
And she makes sure, because they're probably not interested in this conversation, or at least they weren't interested in the other one. So she's just going to make sure Guffy is following them. So, you know, someone in our group is tracking the kids.
Guffy is able to do this.
Yeah. He's a good boy.
good boy.
He's a good boy.
He is the goodest of boys.
Anyway, Estelle, you have the most experience with Sheriff Mitchell. How should we handle this?
Okay, look. I'm honestly kind of planning on just not telling him outright that we did it.
I mean, haven't we kind of already done that?
Well, no. I mean, like, when we show up and the kids are back and he's like, where did the kids come from? And I say, they made it back. And just move on.
Were you not going to tell him? I was planning on, like, rubbing it in his face and being like, hey, we found something you lost.
Well, that was my first, that's my initial thought, because that's how I deal with it, or I have dealt with it in the past, is just ignore him. But if there's going to be more of us, or since there's more of us than just me this time,
Yeah, see, what I was planning was we show up with the kids, we rub it in his face. I might have some choice words for what I think of him as sheriff, and then I was about 50-50 whether I punch him for it.
I don't think violence is necessary here. The whole point of us getting the children back was to prevent violence. Right? Did I misunderstand this whole trip?
I mean, that's a weird way to put it. It was to prevent these kids from dying, which I guess is violence.
Yes, I would consider children dying to be a violence.
I just don't consider it, like, a violence. I would be like, we were preventing death, not a violence. But that, I feel like we're getting into semantics here. I'm just here to watch Fred punch the sheriff in the face and get put in the drunk tank for, you know, 24 hours.
I'm sure all the little algae by the sea will enjoy nibbling on you.
Yeah, see, that's probably the main reason I'm 50-50 on it.
I mean, I'm all for justified comeuppance, but not punching people over it.
Are you too scared to do it, Fred? I dare you to do it, Fred.
You're a terrible influence.
I guess we'll see what happens once we get back.
I mean, I wouldn't stop you. I'll put it that way. More that I won't stop you with having words with him. Because he's not always the most... what's a good way to say this?
He seemed really passive about the kids disappearing, and that...
Look, he's really good at what he does in Smoky Banks, but he's not good with the outside stuff. It's just, it's not his forte.
I just took him to be a bit stubborn about the parameters he had set up, and...
But I mean,
was saving face to a certain extent.
But this wasn't even the kids' fault, though. Like, they were not doing anything wrong. Like, they weren't off the path.
Oh, I mean, it is particular about other people continuing to break the parameters.
Well, I think that's because he just... that's his way of trying to make it not happen again, if that makes sense.
Right. Yes.
And so, while it's one of those things where, like, I understand that he doesn't want to go out into the wild and try to find them, because that's not what he's comfortable doing. But his way of going about stopping that is not... I don't think it was the most effective. I don't think his methods are necessarily the most effective with stopping that from happening. So, that's certainly something that we should bring up to him.
Is this, I guess I'll speak for myself. I will need to be somewhat active in the surrounding wilds in order to complete my sabbatical. If there are perhaps other mysteries that Sheriff Mitchell doesn't want other people to be wandering about finding answers to, maybe he would be amenable to us continuing to do that if you are all interested in still being in the wilds. It sounds crazy when I say that. We almost died, but...
I am super down with that. I mean,
I wasn't really worried about you being up for risking your life, Autumn.
To be honest, I was kind of thinking something along the same lines, because, I mean, Sheriff Mitchell seems like a great guy, but he's kind of a, what do you call it, stick in the mud? And he seems very keen on his rules. And so we could just kind of give him a gentle hint that if there's something not strictly, air quotes, legal that he's done, he could always just ask us, because we're probably going to do it anyway.
Is it worth even talking to him at that point? He didn't really want us coming out here as it was, and we told him we're going, and he's like, don't do that.
Well, maybe we come back, we say the kids have been found, and just plant a bug that says, you know, if you have any other, you know, missing persons or things, we have experience now. We're his best bet, you know?
Yeah, because otherwise we might not hear about, like, he'll probably have information about things going on that we won't know, and if he needs something done but doesn't really have an avenue to do it, we could be that avenue.
Right. Not telling him that we would be going there regardless, but
that more that we're willing to help him out.
We're willing
if he's
to help him out. He seems like a reasonable person. We could be a tool in his toolbox.
Yeah, and I'm with you, Juliet. Mitchell already knows that I plan on being involved with the wilds and the animals out here in some way, shape, or form, as much as I can. And I wonder if maybe the idea that there are four of us who are at least semi-capable to him, who seem to be able to handle ourselves out there, if maybe that'll, you know, make him a little bit more at ease with needing us if something like this happens again.
Yeah, one of his arguments he gave us about not going after the kids was, we don't have the resources to send someone out. Hey, look at us, we're resources. He could send us out.
Exactly.
All right, that sounds like a plan. End scene.
Is that your indication to me that you guys are done talking? All right. As you guys kind of wind down this conversation, you hear kind of frantic little kid noises and also grumpy boofing from Guffy.
Well, time to go find them. And Estelle gets up and gets her stuff and starts kind of walking in the direction of Guffy. Hey, boy! Guffy!
Guffy's boofs get louder, but he doesn't run up to you.
I mean, she'll keep walking towards them.
As you kind of push your way through the brush and the forest, eventually the kids' shoutings become clearer, and you get to Guffy, who is laying on top of two young children, well, a grumpy teenager is trying to drag them out, and Guffy isn't, like, biting at her, but is just kind of like, arr, arr, just, like, soft-mouthing her hands away. Your dog stole my kids.
What were your kids doing?
We maybe got bored and we're trying to leave.
All right. We're done talking. The adults just had to touch base.
Well, I could have been included. You know, you could have talked to me as well. And, you know,
do you want
your dog babysit us, but
well,
fine.
Do you want to be involved in the conversation next time?
I don't know. Maybe.
Well, I mean, there's a good reason we didn't include you, because I think the last thing you told us was you want to be somewhere away from all these crazy trees that attack you and drag you off. And that was pretty much all the conversation was about, was how are we going to get back and spend more time in the trees?
Something that might be important to talk about with you, though, would be, do you have a way to contact your parents when you get back?
Oh, I'll probably just get back on the boat and then just make my way back home. I mean, they trusted me with the little ones, you know, because I'm very mature and responsible. So, you know, I mean, we could also like send them a message through the whatever. Gosh, I don't remember what we called it.
There's radio, right?
Yeah, between
the herbs. Yeah. Well, when we get back, why don't we go to the radio station? I'm sure they'd be happy to spare some airwaves in order for you to contact your parents, who must be worried sick about you.
We were expected back. That's true. Real quick, did you guys give her the poem that Dion wrote her? I don't remember.
No, we just mentioned it. Autumn mentioned it
to
her.
Oh, okay.
Wait, did he give us?
Did he give?
He did give you a note for her.
That's right. We do have a physical piece of paper. Yeah.
I would have given it to her, but we can do that now. I just don't want it to be like, why didn't you give this to me sooner? The answer is because Zach forgot.
No, that's fine. You can do that now if you want.
Also, I just remembered in my pack that I have a note from Dion to you.
She kind of just like looks around and just goes, yeah, okay, fine, I want it.
I hand it to her.
She takes it, looks down at Guffy and goes, don't let them follow me. And kind of like walks off a few steps, opens the letter, reads it, and then just comes back. Her expression has not changed and goes, maybe the forest isn't so bad.
All right, Guffy, get off the kids. Come on. It's time to go.
When you say that, the 10-year-old whose name I'm going to look up,
Rodney,
acts like he's like bench pressing the dog off and is like, I am powerful! And then Guffy just like stands up and licks his face. And Rodney just kind of like bats at it, and they go taking off through the woods. Off in what, north? North.
Yeah.
Northwesternly.
So, where you guys are at right now on the map, you are kind of in a valley near another small mountain range. So, the rest of this day is kind of a long, treacherous climb up that takes longer than would be convenient, really. And as you do, the weather changes. It grows kind of cold and shivery. It isn't freezing by any means, but, you know, the kids just seem a little miserable. The path that you're taking up this mountain, like, kind of across the edge of this mountain leading up, is eventually you get to the point where you're, like, above the cloud line, right? So you can kind of see way down. This peak is kind of isolated, at least to the north and to the east, right, which is kind of the vision that you would have of it. As you're climbing up it, you eventually hit a point where you kind of like break through these clouds that have rolled into this valley, and it's still pretty cold just because the elevation's getting up, but you're at least getting some sunlight now. You've hit the point where the vegetation is starting to like dwindle, and you have a clearer picture out over just this sea of fog. And way, way, way off to the north, you can see the long expanse of forest that leads back to your home.
As the kids are getting colder, Estelle will pull out like the extra like socks and shirts and everything that she has. And so at some point, they're just like wearing like oversized shirts, but it's like anything to just add layers.
Yeah. And then I need all of you to make me notice of some sort checks.
Okay, I don't make it. That's a minus one.
Okay.
It's a zero.
I have a plus one.
I have plus three.
So we average a plus one. No, a little less than plus one.
So, Estelle, you're kind of like fussing over the kids and trying to get them to bundle up and wrapping coats around them. Guffy's kind of standing next to them, and Fred, you might be helping too, trying to like tie some ropes around and everything. Juliet and Autumn, you're looking out over this bank of clouds, and you see way, way, way off to the east, right? So basically, you're at a high point, unless, so like to your west, the mountain would continue up. To the north is your home, right? And, but to the east is like, you haven't seen this area yet. You can kind of see rolling down hills. You eventually hit like a river valley, so you can see a river kind of cutting through and spidering through lower foothills. Actually, no, you wouldn't because of the fog. Sorry. It's just all fog. My bad. I shouldn't have described it like that. Anyways, so off to your east, this is an area that you haven't been in yet, right? And you're just kind of like scanning across, and briefly for a second, you see something break the surface of that fog, and like a very slow, you can almost see it like a liquid, like there's surface pressure as the clouds push up, and you see like a massive, expansive something break the surface, the hide of which seems to be some kind of like mottled gray and a little bit of green of like some kind of moss on it, like break the surface and then sink back below. And when it drops back below, you feel an impact on the ground. Thump, right? And you can like, it's got a delay, and then you feel a slight quake, and then it happens again, way further than you would expect it to. This thing breaking the surface of this cloud bank, falling back below, and then an impact on the ground.
You're seeing that, right?
Yep, definitely seeing that.
Like, giant mountain walking away?
Why is the ground shaking?
There's a large creature walking. That's the best I could describe.
That's literally not possible. That's clearly some kind of bird. That's like a big bird. What else could it possibly be?
Why would it be walking then, making the ground thump?
You see this thing again, like, you can almost see it like a spined back, you know, like, clearly ridges that to you are reminiscent of vertebrae, breaks the surface again, falls back below, another massive thump. And at this point, it's moving off, like, further than you can see out across this, like, low overcast cloud bank that rolled in, just this brief thump, thump. As you just slowly see this back of something cresting and falling as it moves off.
It's too in time to not be that, right? That thing has to be huge.
Yes, I'm kind of curious. We didn't see any... To make that sort of impact, one would think it would affect the geography, right? We didn't see any giant footsteps, unless it was just too big for us to really realize what they were.
Or if it didn't look like feet like we think of feet. Like, think of the difference between, like, a dog and an elephant. Like, the footprints they leave are so different, and if it's so huge that it doesn't look like a footprint like we would.
Still, I'm surprised we didn't see any signs, I guess I'll say.
Maybe it avoids civilization?
Entirely possible.
Maybe, like, the radio frequencies, like, bother it, and that keeps it away?
This isn't one of your books.
Actually, no. Moving mountains, not a thing. That's just ridiculous.
Oh, no, I meant the radio frequency scaring off something.
Kind of works with birds, doesn't it? Like, that's just like a normal thing. Birds don't like certain frequencies, you know?
Yeah. It just, the way you phrase it seemed like it was maybe a plot point in one of your books.
I've read a lot of books. I don't want to know if this one happens to be.
Fair enough.
If we're being honest, it seems a little pedestrian for my books.
Right. Anyway, it's moving off, so I guess we can keep going?
Homeward bound.
You start scrambling your way down the mountains, and I'll say you get to about, we'll say the tile before there. I know this was a short day of travel, but going up and down a mountain is pretty difficult.
I know, I've done it.
By the time you get back down out of this mountain, you've kind of had to do a lot of switching back, and it was still fairly cloudy as you were making your way down, which hurt your visibility. And as you got lower and lower down into the cloud bank, it got more and more difficult to see. that's starting to dissipate now, basically just in time for you to start seeing some stars in the night sky. You guys know about where you're at. You're, you know, within walking distance of getting home at this point. So you make your way down to another clearing in the forest, maybe like right on the foothills of where the trees start to grow massive again, and you're about to be in the blind before you make it home. And you have another another night to camp.
I'm taking the 3 a.m. shift. Do we make watch checks?
Yeah, this would be a moment if you guys want to.
Did you want to chat for a sec?
I figured we could chat between, like, when we're switching off shifts.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
That seems like, you know, like a part where it's like, oh, we'd be alone. It's not just like, Fred and Estelle, don't be here for a scene.
So we need to do watch checks?
Yeah, go ahead.
Everybody?
Yeah, let's do everybody. Just in case.
Heck yeah, I got a 4.
Whew. I got a 3. Hot dang. I actually did well this time.
I got a 5.
0.
Okay, I kind of like this. So as you all kind of sit and have this watch, you all have a lot of time to just kind of look at the forest in this kind of fairly light, multicolored night that, you know, greets whoever. It's very Aurora Borealis-y in color scheme, right? The colors are shifting as the moons are moving through the sky, and it makes the forest look odd and haunted to begin with. But as you look this time, you just noticed a few oddities. Like, not in a concerning way. I'm not telling you this as, like, danger, danger, danger. But you notice maybe, like, a little bit of burned smell that you didn't notice before. You maybe notice a little bit of static that you didn't notice before. Like, you're occasionally getting static shocks. And maybe you see one or two snapped off trees that are like, that doesn't look like a dead old tree. That looks like a fairly living tree that broke off. You don't see, like, footprints, per se. But you see just, like, a few indications of minor damage.
Is this, like, alluding to the things we just saw?
I'm not telling you that specifically.
I was guessing so, but
well, I didn't know if it was that or the Blighthounds.
It could be a combination.
It does not look Blighthound related.
Okay. Okay. So, we switch shifts, Caitlin.
All right. Do you have your flashlight?
If by my flashlight you mean the one you're letting me borrow because I didn't pack a flashlight, the answer is yes.
Okay, flashlight check. You have your water?
Yes.
I'm just making sure it's all within range. You need a checklist before you embark on something like watch.
I don't, like, my entire life currently is in this bag that's sitting next to me.
I was just making sure it's easily accessible. Can you feel around for it in the dark? Do you know exactly where it is?
I have a flashlight. I don't need to feel around in the dark.
You want it to be fast in case some creature approaches you.
And I need to throw water at it?
No, the water is so that you can drink.
But why does that need to be easily accessible? I will be fine, Juliet. I did watch last night without a checklist. And without a flashlight. And it was fine.
Okay, we saw that giant creature earlier today.
Yeah. Yeah. What was next on your checklist?
You said you didn't care about the checklist. It's fine. I go a little overboard sometimes.
How are you doing? Like, I feel like this is outside of your comfort zone. Like, are you doing okay with everything?
Mostly all the way out of my comfort zone, yes. The checklist makes me feel better.
You still have the checklist, so it's not completely, like...
Yeah, I guess so.
Like, you were gonna do this whole thing alone, so, like, are you doing okay now? Like,
yeah, I mean, I'm glad I didn't do that.
Me too. Like, I think you, like... You would have died, I think? I don't want to mean this like I would have lived. Like, I think I might have died, too.
Fair. There's been a lot of unexpected things out here. I would agree.
Yeah, like, so many things. Like, mushrooms that made me almost get eaten by a giant mole.
Yeah, there's enough stories for about 10 trips, I think.
Or half a book, you know.
Yes, if you're the authorly type, I guess.
But so I was thinking.
Yeah.
Like, you seem like you could use a little bit more physical fitness in your life before we come out again.
Are you saying I'm out of shape? Because, yeah, that's probably true, yeah.
I didn't want to say it meanly. Like, it's also like, it's like one of those things where it's like, I'm quite fit, and like me being like, you're not in shape, it feels mean, you know? Like, it's kind of like the people in relationships being like, oh, you'll find someone, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it feels a little bit mean coming from me, and I didn't want it to come off that way.
Well, I appreciate that.
But I was thinking, since we're, like, neighbors, that you can wake up in the morning and work out with me when we get back.
How early in the morning?
How early do you wake up? What's a normal time? What time do people who don't work out wake up?
I don't know. Maybe like 7?
What time does work usually start, Cody?
Oh, yeah. When does work start? Like 8?
I mean, they don't have like a... They don't have like a punch.
Oh, there's like multiple shifts. Yeah, there's like, yeah.
Yeah.
We could do that. We might need to push back work a little bit, but that seems fine.
Okay. What kind of exercise would we be doing?
We'd probably be doing slightly different things, but we'd do some like strength training and some cardio.
Okay. That doesn't sound terrible. That could be, I feel like that would be useful in the wilds.
Yeah, the thing is it's going to like not be fun at times because that means you're doing a good job working out.
Oh, okay. It seems like a weird ethos, but I
mean, you need
I
to push
I
yourself.
I guess I can study it, and the best way to do that is by experiencing it.
Exactly. Now, our emotional fortitude, I have no idea how to help that.
I expect experience is probably the best instructor there as well, right?
Yeah, but the way we get more experience is by going back into the wild, so... Like, and I don't know if seeing... If I want to see more mutilated parts of bodies?
That was disturbing, yes. I guess I'm not looking forward to that part, but I think doing good where we can and making space for the things we can't control is probably the best approach we can take. The wilds are a bit bigger than all of us. Really?
And just a bit.
We can study them and try to understand them, but they're not quite quantifiable.
Yeah, and I don't know. I'm glad that we're a team now, the four of us, or five of us.
Can't forget Guffy.
Poof.
Guffy's on all the watches.
Guffy's like laying on his back, legs like... splayed as much as a dog can.
Like, scratch my belly.
But yeah, like, I'm as unprepared as we all were in different ways. I'm glad you're here, Juliet. Checklist and all.
Thank you, Autumn. That's probably the nicest thing somebody said about my checklist. I'm glad you're here, too.
Now go get some sleep. I'm going to stare at the magic
not
fire.
Not the same to you.
The night passes uneventfully. Those... kind of swirling and shifting colors of evening giving way as the suns actually rise. You're kind of left with a slightly more monochrome sunlight color. Monochrome? Whatever. So, day breaks. You're on the edge of where those birds were, and, you know, you're able to kind of plan around that as you... cross this sort of open grassy field around the trees. You're like aware of how to sneak and avoid, you know, causing such a ruckus that they all start dive bombing you again. The kids are dubious of this, but, you know, just kind of like keep a hand on Guffy as they slowly creep their way through.
So I have a quick question.
Sure.
As we pass through the tile with the burbs, do we go past Hugo's house?
You can if you want to talk to Hugo.
I don't necessarily want to talk to him. I want to see if his house is still there.
Oh. It was a cave, right?
Or cave. I just want to see.
Yeah. His little cave. I'll say you could, like, swing by just to look, and you do see that same door that was in the stone. Like, it seems to be there still, yes.
I'm going to leave a little note. I hope he can read. I assume he can. I'm going to leave a note saying... because we told him about our mission, right? We told him about how we're trying to find kids.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave a note saying, we found the kids, headed back to Smoky Banks. Invitation is still open if you want to visit.
Oh, yeah, that's nice.
Okay. Got it.
The GM is smiling.
Like, a little thing pops up in the corner of your screen that says, like...
Hugo will remember this. Yep.
Or, like, this decision has consequences. New quest line opened.
The thing that I like to say with when you guys do stupid stuff in games is go, noted.
I don't know if I would say this is stupid, but it is relevant.
Quest started. Hugo repatriation.
Quest failed. Hugo liberation.
Quest failed, not bringing the wild back with us. The sheriff will remember this. All right, so the rest of the walk back to Smoky Banks, although not easy, is less treacherous. The weather has broken, and it's now another sunny and just warm day. The kids seem to be in higher spirits, and like this walk back kind of reminds you of what it's ideally supposed to be like out here. There's fascinating plants everywhere, fascinating animals, and fresh and fragrant air, although not always pleasant in that way. It is definitely assault on the senses to be walking through, you know, naturally grown vegetation.
When we go through the area with the mushrooms, Estelle's gonna grab another
handful
for Matthew.
Gotcha. As you approach all the way back to Smoky Banks, it's beginning to be dusk again, and you can see, as you're walking through the wood, you can kind of see a clearing, right, where you can see the beginnings of these broken, and you can see, like, the starts of those ruins, right? So those, like, broken structures that look like what used to be an entire town of this old civilization that no one remembers. The surrounding it, though, you know, is just all woods, whatever, all around that seem overgrown for huge amounts of time, right? The trees are old and tall. The underbrush is, like, developed and difficult. But as you approach the clearing, you can feel, like, a return to normalcy a little bit as you're walking through that, as you're walking through those ruins. Like, the initial outcroppings, there's just, like, a few broken, you know, cut stones. And as you go further, you can start seeing foundations and actual crumbled buildings until you arrive all the way back in Smoky Banks. When you do, not much is different, right? Like, initially. But as soon as you get out of the ruins and you can, like, look down onto Smoky Banks, right? They're, like, up on a hill. You can see that, like, things are knocked over. Like, what trees there are seem to have been blown over. It almost looks like a hurricane hit. And, like, I'm trying to think of the right way to describe this. I'm from an area where there are tornadoes. When a tornado hits somewhere, it's gone. When a hurricane hits somewhere, everything is damaged, right? Does this kind of understand the difference?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It looks like a hurricane hit. Is that accurate, Mandy, the person who's, like, lived through hurricanes?
Depends on the strength of the hurricane, well, but yes.
Right. My point is, if a tornado hits something, it's, like, level. It's totally gone, right? But, like, hurricanes can hit an area and they're, like, relatively okay. There's, like, I know there's bigger and smaller hurricanes. My point is there's widespread and not absolutely leveling damage, right? As soon as you walk in, you see the sheriff standing and leaning beside, like, on the edge of one of those, you know, stone buildings. He sees all of you walk out and goes, "Yeah, I figured we need to have a talk about some of this." Thanks for listening to this episode of Wanderlust. Music for this show is credited down below. If you like this campaign, you can find more of our shows at the Wandering Gamer website or on Podbean. You can also find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch. Links in the description. Now bear in mind, in the wilds, some wander to get lost, and some wander to find themselves.